Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Andy Murray, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, represented by Mr. Simon Briggs. Hello, Simon.
Hello, nice to be here.
And Eurosport, represented by Catherine Whittaker. Hello, Catherine.
We've got all media partners covered.
We have, and I'm BBC Radio 5 Live's David Law. We are here on day three of the Australian Open. I can't remember. It's very late at night, as always. We're actually not outside underneath the pterodactyls flying above today. We are in one of the little interview rooms where the players come in to talk to the media. It has been an eventful few hours. First of all, Catherine, I mean, we've just witnessed, to give you a little rundown of the headlines of the day, they don't really involve Andy Murray for once, do they? I mean, okay, there's a little bit of concern about his ankle, but Dan Evans, from a British perspective, has just had the win of his life. Nick Kyrgios has gone down from two sets to love up. What else has happened?
Oh, crikey, what else? I mean, there was barely room to pay attention to anything else apart from that. I mean, even Andy, I was bracing myself for a pretty challenging flash interview with Andy Murray coming up straight off the court from that dramatic third set and the twisting his ankle and all the rest of it. And the first thing he dropped his bag, the first thing he said was, "Did Dan win?" And there was a massive broad smile on his face when I said, yeah. And he said he'd been watching Dan right up until taking to the court and he thought he was going to win, but, you know, anything can happen.
Yeah, nice story. Simon Briggs, I seem to remember seeing you about, 10 hours ago, and you said, "Nothing much is happening today, is it?" And, that's turned around.
It was the original day of two halves, because around about 6 o'clock, I was whinging. You know, I'm a massive whinger.
You are a bit.
Yeah, a bit of a whinger. To all my colleagues about how boring it was and what the hell were we going to write about. And then it kicked off, and I was actually down in the BBC 5 Live commentary box, and we had Evans on one screen, we had Kyrgios on the other, and then Murray was playing in front of us, and I was trying to sort of commentate while also sending over a few paragraphs about the Evans win, which had to be one of the most mind-scrambling experiences. I mean, parallel processing isn't my strong point at the best of times, but yeah, multitasking was quite difficult.
And what did you think of, certainly, first of all, the performance of Dan Evans out there today? I mean, he started pretty slowly. He was actually saying afterwards that he was struggling with what Cilic was bringing in that first set, but boy, he turned it around.
Well, yeah, I mean, Catherine was actually sitting next to me, and Catherine said, "He's hitting it out the middle of the court." And actually, I realised he intended to do that. He must have been told to do that either by Leon Smith or by Mark Hilton, because he kept on doing it, and then he got slower and slower in the speed with which he was hitting the ball. And it was clearly a very smart tactic, because Cilic, not confident at the moment. I actually didn't realise until I checked the records, he'd lost to the world number 117 in Chennai the week, 2 weeks ago, I suppose now. He couldn't take the ball on. He couldn't generate any pace. He just began to lose faith in his own ground strokes, and it was a miraculous and unexpected game plan that delivered results.
Sure was.
Yeah, I mean, it's all very well saying that now, though, but, you know, Simon and I sat together in the media seats watching that first set, and we left solid in the knowledge that we wouldn't be returning at any point to see a Dan Evans victory. I mean, it was the most remarkable turnaround, and as you say, Simon, all the more remarkable because he didn't really change anything. Yes, he started playing a bit better, cut out a few of the errors, but it was the same game plan all along. And yes, Cilic really low on confidence and having a bit of a dodgy spell at the moment, but that first set should have given him some confidence. I mean, when the serve was hitting the spots, Dan couldn't do anything about it. So, yeah, really bizarre match, but I'm really chuffed for Dan Evans.
It was like role reversal in the match, wasn't it? The way after the first set, Evans suddenly started to just get more animated. And he's one of those characters, isn't he? He wants something going on. He wants to engage, whether it's with the crowd or he wants a row or he wants to get excited about something. If it's just run-of-the-mill, boring, he's not a very good player. If it gets energetic and heated, or he finds a cause, or he gets inspired, he really is a player.
It was as if he didn't want to go into a slugfest with Cilic. And you can understand why, because he's giving away, what, almost a foot in height and several kilos of muscle power there. So he just decided to junk him, really, to confuse him, to ambush him, counterpunch, use all his ingenuity and kind of rat-like cunning. And the moments when he had to do something spectacular, he did it. But a lot of it was actually just very controlled. I'm not going to give you anything to work with. I'm not going to give you any pace. I'm not going to give you any angles.
So the biggest win of Dan Evans' life, and the first person he spoke to straight afterwards, was Catherine Whittaker.
Dan, just incredible stuff from you tonight. You're making a bit of a habit of big wins on big occasions, but where does this one rank?
I don't know. I didn't finish the job last time on the big occasion, so no, I was thinking about that quite a bit, and to come through was, on the last match point as well, was pretty pleasing for me.
Talk me through the turnaround after the first set, because it was quite remarkable. It seemed like a different match from the first set to the subsequent three.
Yeah, I struggled with like the shade on the court, and his pace of ball was coming through pretty quick, and once the sun went down, I felt much better and got into the match. Just hang in and see what happens, and good things happen today.
How about this court and this crowd? They're still singing your name over there, Dan. They were pretty special for you tonight.
No, yeah, it was great. All the Aussie boys said that this court could get quite loud, so I was looking forward to it, but after the first set, there wasn't that much to sing about, so I'm happy that I won, and I'm looking forward to playing on Friday.
Finally, we saw you go straight to your phone there. Who's the first person you text?
Can't tell you that. Cheers.
Cheers, Dan.
So, Dan Evans talking to Catherine on the court. He sounded pretty chuffed, even a bit emotional, did he?
Yeah, I might have been the first person he spoke to, but he wouldn't tell me who the first person he texted, though, would he? Was it you, David?
I think I was about number four.
Number four? That's pretty good, isn't it?
Just to give me some stick for something that I'd asked him for before the match a few days ago. I said, I want to see a photo of you two next to each other at the net, whether it's you against Cilic or you against Janovic. I think that would be a very funny photo. And he texted me just to say, do you still want the photo? After he'd just beaten Cilic, which I find quite amusing. But anyway, Catherine, he seemed, he likes a one-liner. He seemed a little bit more, well, you saw what it meant to him in that interview. We saw it at the US Open when he lost to Wawrinka. He was absolutely floored on that occasion. This is kind of payback, isn't it? This is redemption.
Yeah, he's a challenging interviewee, it's fair to say. A particularly challenging TV interviewee, because he's not particularly comfortable in front of the camera. That's fine. Not everybody can be. It's almost charming, although not if you're the person having to interview him necessarily. But that was fantastic, because he was just completely relaxed and natural. It was his instinctive reaction, which is what he's not able to give when it's not that situation, because he's sort of a bit more anxious and self-conscious, I suppose. But yeah, that was a real high point in my interviewing Dan Evans' career.
And there's a career. That's how well Dan Evans is playing. They're frequenting the same tournaments and getting lots of interviews done together. Simon Briggs, at the same time as Dan Evans was doing this, we had Nick Kyrgios embroiled in a classic Nick Kyrgios match. We had where were your attentions at this point? Because, I mean, obviously you've got to cover the best of what's going on for the day's newspapers, for the Telegraph website. I mean, you must have had three sets of eyes needed to look at all the screens and follow everything.
Yeah, well, as I say, it was pretty frenzied in the commentary box. Before I move on, I would like to point out that almost charming is a very good slogan for Dan Evans. that was the one that the paper's probably going to lead on tomorrow, and that was the one which was the most dramatic, I guess, from the British perspective. The Kyrgios match was totally bonkers, which I suppose is entirely true to form.
Totally role reversal from 2 years ago when he came back to beat Seppi in five, having been two love down. This time he was two love up against Seppi and lost in five. He's incidentally come into the press conference, Kyrgios, and said, "I need a coach." I realise that psychologically as much as anything. He also was giving a few little digs at John McEnroe for saying he thinks he knows everything. You don't need to ask me, ask him. He knows my body better than me, so forth. But, you know, it was a pretty difficult match to watch, and he ended up, I mean, I didn't have the sound on that match. I was sort of watching it out of the corner of my eye. I heard he got booed off, which 10-8 in the fifth seems a bit harsh to me, but I don't know. Catherine's rolling her eyes.
Yeah, because we should be talking about Andrés Seppi, not about Nick Kyrgios. I mean, he's a man that's just lost in the second round and has never really done anything much. He got a good win over Rafael Nadal. You know, I'm fed up with talking about him.
He's done more than that. Come on, he's done more than that. He's reached a quarterfinal at Wimbledon.
He's lost in the second round, yeah, and Andrés Seppi was fantastic today.
I haven't gone on to Andrés Seppi. I would
we're dealing with the loser first. Yeah.
Well, listen, if Andy Murray lost in his home country, would you talk about the loss or would you talk about just Andrés Seppi?
Andy Murray's world number one.
So, okay, if it was Tim Henman or if it was...
Are you seriously trying to argue that we don't give him more attention than his achievements merit?
Kyrgios, we certainly talk about him a lot more than we do other players because there's a lot going on with the guy, is there not?
Yeah, there's a lot going on with a lot of people that we don't talk about. Everyone's got their...
Why do we talk about him?
Everyone's got their stuff to sort out, Nick. It's not just you that's a complex individual. Look, I mean... What can you say? I mean, he behaved appallingly. He behaved appallingly. I think... I can completely understand why he was booed off court. I know why you can't argue with the entertainment factor. I completely accept that. It is entertaining. You can't take your eyes off it. If that's all you want from sport, he ticks your boxes. That's fine. You know, there is an argument for that. There's also an argument for sportsmanship and behaving well. You know, that doesn't mean taking all the fun out of the sport. And I think he is... too often on the wrong side of that. And I didn't get to go to his press conference, but I just read through all the quotes and it's all just really contradictory. You know, at one point he says, you know, I don't want it enough. And then he wants to make out that he doesn't care because he's so cool. He's too cool to care. Well, then go and do something else. He obviously does care. He just doesn't want anyone to know he cares.
Well, what I would say is delivering those quotes, the difficult thing with him is trying to read what he's actually saying. Because if he said a couple of things in it, and then if you just watched him very closely, he would just raise his eyebrows a bit as if to say, I didn't mean that. Oh, yeah, I meant the opposite of that. It's very difficult to try to follow him. His mind is working all over the place. I don't even know if he knows what he's thinking from 1 minute to the next.
Yeah, I didn't actually get a chance to go to that conference either because I was commentating on the Murray match. But I do remember we had this at Wimbledon, didn't we, when Jack Sock actually came into the press conference room and half the time Kyrgios was addressing kind of sideways quips to him. And that was a particularly awkward situation. He can actually be very engaging. There was another press conference this year at Wimbledon after he lost to Murray where he kind of opened up and talked about the fact that he was maybe frustrated with himself. He'd been playing computer games and that clearly wasn't the best preparation, but he hadn't been able to get his head right. And he felt like he was almost in confessional mode. But then the next day he'll be kind of quirky and offhand again. And you never know where you are with him as a player or as a person.
Andrés Seppi, let's address him as a player who did play admirably in coming back. And I mean, you know, he's not a bells and whistles player, is he? But what a pro.
Oh, there's so much to admire in Andrés Seppi. He's everything that Nick Kyrgios isn't, and Nick Kyrgios is everything that he isn't. So I guess it's, you know, whatever your flavour is. But he deserves a whole lot of admiration, not just today, but I think throughout his career. I mean, yeah, he's a very quiet, understated professional, really, which makes him sound sensationally dull, I realise, as I'm saying that. But he's sort of somehow not really dull. Yes, no bells and whistles, but he's not boring. He's just a straightforward, very, very good tennis player.
He had one of the best beards I've ever seen a tennis player have in the off-season. He'd just clearly been growing it for months. And then he showed a sort of before and after, having shaved it all off, because he's a sort of fresh-faced... he looks like a Swede to me. I don't know how he's Italian. But anyway, we also had Andy Murray playing today. And frankly, for a while... I mean, whilst the Kyrgios-Seppi match and the Evans-Cilic match were going on together, Murray was kind of like a footnote, really, for the first hour or so, wasn't he? Because, I mean, he was handling Rublev so straightforwardly, and then he had his tumble, and it seems as though that there is at least some pain there. I don't know what you think, Simon, what about that?
The footnote that became the ankle note. Is that the worst pun of the day?
I wasn't even intending it.
Well, he did totally fall over right in front of the commentary box. So he went down with a big bang and he was grimacing. Then he got up and he kept on saying, not good, not good. And sort of making a sort of cut sign across his throat to the team in his players' box. Then he had the trainer on. And he was limping. Actually, Gigi Salmon was commentating with me, and she pointed out that he seemed to be limping more every time he came to our end, close to his team. And when he went out on the far end, he seemed to get over it a bit and was going to get on with the match. It was the only interesting thing about a match, really, because Rublev was pretty disappointing. Murray, until he fell over, was very slick, not particularly different or unusual in anything he did, just sent down the big serves and kept up a pressure which Rublev couldn't handle, and it was a bit of a nothing match apart from that little wobble. Afterwards, he sounded like he was pretty confident he'd be okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think we've seen over the years enough of Andy Murray having force to know that whatever happens, whether it's serious or not, there's a shock element initially, and he's slightly panicked by it. I've seen it with a few players, and he's probably one of the most in that regard. You can see the fear in his eyes of, oh no, what just happened? How bad is it? And then we find out later on. Well, the first person he spoke to after winning the match was Catherine, and Catherine was there for Eurosport on the court, and she asked him how that ankle was feeling.
Yeah, it's sore just now. The positive thing is that I was able to move fine on it. Normally, when you do have a bad ankle sprain, it's tough to put weight on it, but ankle sprains tend to get worse like a few hours after you've done it. So, you know, I need to just see how it is later tonight. I'm sure I'll be okay, but it's a bit sore just now, so I need to look after it.
All things considered, that was a pretty gritty, professional, solid performance. Are you happy with it overall?
Yeah, it was better ball striking than the first match. I served a lot better, which was good, and was adjusting to the conditions a little bit better. It is fairly quick, so you need to be, you know, sharp on your feet. And you know, once I got going at the beginning of the match, I started to play some good stuff, and it was positive.
You talked after the last match, they've got new balls here this year. It's going to take a bit of adjusting to. Is that something you feel is improving with each match and with each practice?
Yeah, I mean, obviously I played in Doha, and the build-up, and we're playing in conditions quite similar to tonight. It was quite cool. The first match was tricky. The ball was bouncing a lot. It was very lively, not that easy to control. So, you know, I've sometimes here not started so well and improved as the event went on. So I'm hoping that'll be the case again this year. And tonight was a step in the right direction.
Well done, Andy. We'll let you go and get some treatment on that ankle.
Thanks.
So, Catherine, I mean, you looked into his eyes and actually had that conversation. Did you see any real concern in his face?
A little bit, not as much as I was expecting. I was bracing myself for him even to say, you know, I'd rather not do that interview. Good on him for not doing that. He was good as gold with Todd Woodbridge on the court, and the same with me. There's that element of doubt, that the question mark is, as he said, ankle injuries of the sort he thinks he has tend to get worse a couple of hours after you sustain them. So he didn't really know, but he was pretty confident, I thought, that it would basically be okay. And I think he's had enough turns of the ankle over the course of his career to sort of be quite familiar with that injury and how it progresses. So an element of worry, but no major cause for panic, I don't think.
Elsewhere, earlier in the day, when it was quiet, when not much was happening, when Simon came in late because he'd been pinning his feet up somewhere, Venus Williams got a win, and Angelique Kerber struggled again, but she got through it. I mean, I think that's four three set matches she's had in her five matches so far this year. It's not really clicking, is it? But my word, she has the heart of a lion, that woman. She really doesn't stop until every little bit of energy is expended.
The second set tiebreak against Karina Witthoeft, who I don't particularly rate as a real threat, was dreadful. I mean, that was the point where she could have closed out the match in straight sets. It was... I mean, it wasn't the performance of a seeded player, let alone a world number one. Credit to her that she turned it around early in the third. She kind of reminded Witthoeft that she was the dominant player here, and it's an all German bash, so I guess they probably know each other pretty well. But yeah, we're still waiting for her to show anything like the formal conviction that you'd expect from the defending champion.
Could you see her finding that, Catherine, working her way into the tournament? I mean, I remember she was match point down against Misaki Doi a year ago. She's going to have to flick a switch pretty quickly.
It just looks like such a different Angelique Kerber to a year ago. I'm finding her an uncomfortable watch at the moment. She looks like she's not having 1 ounce of fun out there. It all looks like so much effort. The body language is appalling and deteriorating, really. I feel like, you know, she should at least fake it, you know, but after every error, she's just killing herself about, you know, it's just so negative. And I just don't see any pleasure in being on a tennis court in her face. And, you know, it was such a joy seeing her enjoy her ascent to the top of the game last year and her beaming smile and just loving the sport. And I'm quite sure it's temporary. It could be so temporary that she regains it at some point during this tournament. You know, there could be a switch that gets flicked, you know, in a big match, quarterfinals or something, and she remembers what it's all about and why it's so great. But I'm not seeing it at the moment.
No, I know the feeling. Roger Federer victorious today. It wasn't that straightforward against Noah Rubin, 20-year-old American. I mean, he won the first couple of sets, but really should have lost the third one. Probably was a breakdown, Federer. He's not there yet, is he? He's not the vintage Federer just yet. I don't know. Do you think he's going to work his way back to that, Simon?
Well, didn't we have a bit of a prediction contest on this in our pre-tournament podcast, and I said quite confidently he wasn't going to beat Berdych. I seem to remember you two taking the opposite view. I'm feeling solid in my stance right now. Maybe he'll flick a switch himself between now and Friday. All I would say is that it's an excellent, excellent match to look forward to, and a great one for those of us writing in the papers, because you know that whichever way that goes, it's a great story, and we can actually preview it as well in Friday's paper, so looking forward to that.
Oh, that's good news then. Now, we also had wins for Garbiñe Muguruza today. John Isner went out in a five-setter to the brother of Alex Zverev, Misha Zverev. My word, he plays some nice serve-volleying tennis. Real throwback he is. Anything else caught your eye today? Were there any other major results? I can't really think of any.
Well, Sam Querrey beat Alex de Minaur.
So he's the next opponent of Murray, isn't he?
Next opponent of Andy Murray. And Simon got some pretty interesting stuff about his position on the inauguration of the new President of the United States from him today.
Sam Querrey?
Well, it's more that he's going to be playing Murray on Friday, which is, what, the 20th? And that's inauguration day, so we figured that we'd put in a few questions about that. I also really want to ask Murray about Ivan Lendl's view on the whole affair, because Lendl, not known for his leftist sympathies, he might consider Trump to be a bit soft.
Well, neither is Sam Querrey now, it turns out.
No, because we were thinking that we were saying to ourselves, isn't Sam Querrey's father a Democrat? And then we realised it's actually John Isner's father who's a Democrat. And from our conversation with Sam, he very much is not.
No, I think it's safe to say you managed to identify somebody that feels vaguely positive about what's going to happen on Friday, which is good going.
There we go. Politics here on the Tennis Podcast. Who'd have thought it?
Millions of people have lost weight with personalised plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story.
In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right. Now, next day of the Australian Open is day number four. It is tomorrow. We've got, for starters, all the British players up early, haven't we? Because Johanna Konta is on the Rod Laver Arena. I think that will be it's not the first time she's ever been there, because she was a semi-finalist last year. She's starting off, though, against Naomi Osaka. Crikey, Simon, you better get to bed. You're going to have to be up early for that.
Yeah, well, we're hoping that we can get out for golf, you know, after the the first two matches have been played on the court.
And you're not actually joking, are you?
Well, I'm half joking. The thing is that, in theory, the players should be over by 3 p.m., the Brits, but then you've got to go to press. That'll be 4 p.m., then you've got to write it up. That's 5:30, so probably a pipe dream. Anyway, I'd say that Konta's going to beat Osaka in straight sets, having watched Osaka first round. Lovely shots, but definitely shaky on the movement. Won't be able to cover as much court as Konta.
And the other two players, Heather Watson and Carl Edmund, both in action. How many British players are going to be left in the draw after day four? Simon Briggs.
Okay, it's late tonight. Who are they?
Already got two.
Kyle...
Karina Buster, he's got. Buster. And Heather Watson
Jennifer
has got.
Brady of the United States qualifier.
Yeah, three out of three tomorrow.
So five players into round three. Round four, is it? Round three. I'm getting way overexcited here. So round three of the Australian Open, says Simon Briggs. How many did you say?
I think I agree. You said that very nonchalantly, as if Kyle Edmund.
Happens all the time.
Beating Karina Buster wouldn't be an upset, of course. Karina Buster's the seeded player, but I agree. I think it's going to be a full house.
I'm going full house as well. So Rafael Nadal is the night match tomorrow. He's up against Marcus Baghdatis. Remember that? Oh, those are the days 11 years ago when Baghdatis got to the final. Oh dear, Baghdatis must be about 48 now. Before that, we have got who? Novak Djokovic is playing in the afternoon. Catherine's going to tell me the rest.
It's Serena Williams and Lucy Safarova opening up the night session.
Wow, that is a good one, isn't it? Because they played a French Open final together. So, I don't know, do you think Safarova might be able to... She could stretch her, I think, if she played well.
She could stretch her. I mean, Serena's still a bit of an unknown. I've picked Serena to win the tournament, so I'll pick her to win a second round match. But yeah, it could be interesting.
Could be.
I should point out, I've already had some flack for picking Halep as runner-up in the women's draw after you forced me to make predictions. I think one of the things I don't like about tennis predictions is that it's also contingent on fitness. And fitness is so hard to know because people keep a lid on it, whereas... In my development stage as a hack, I wrote about cricket, and cricket is a team sport. You know, individual bits falling off players doesn't affect the overall picture. But something like Halep, she's got tendonitis in her knee, and that's it really.
If you don't like predictions, Simon Briggs, you're on the wrong podcast, is all I can say, because Rubbish Predictions is our middle name. Catherine Whittaker, Simon Briggs, lovely to have you with us, as always, here on the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and Eurosport. Don't forget, Eurosport are running a special offer, $19.99, for tennis coverage on their Eurosport player for a full 12 months. That includes three Grand Slam tournaments live, ball by ball. Go and get that if you would like. And... What else have we got to tell you about? We're going to be back tomorrow, that's for sure. I also do those little videos. Have you seen those, Catherine, on Facebook? I tell everybody in the morning what's coming up and what's going to happen. She hasn't watched any of those at all. She's looking at me blankly as if to say, I'm not going to watch your stupid little videos, David Law. You can also challenge me on my daily match of the day on Twitter at Tennis Podcast. Go and have a sleep. This is when you can. Sleep is for the week. We'll be back tomorrow.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.